fix that. Like, yeah, we'll leave the lights right there. Yeah, we're good. We got a video to show here in just a second. So we're in a series on the stewardship. Stewardship, meaning taking care of what God's entrusted to us. And today we're going to talk about something called feedback. Hey, could you grab Levi out there in the lobby and have him give Jacob a hand with that? Yeah. All right. We got, there we go. Come on. Get the technology work. There we go. Return on obedience. But before we talk about that, I don't know about you, but I'm still on a high from last night. That harvest party was fantastic. Three baptisms, many visitors from the community. I was really just excited about just hanging out with brothers and sisters. And I want to especially, again, thank everybody who helped set up, the Parks and the Annies particularly, who really just did an amazing job getting things ready, and the Gerths, some others who helped volunteer and set up. I just want to thank everybody for help making yesterday so special. And it was something to see Vicky and Val in those knocker balls. Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to talk about return on obedience. There's a business term called ROI. Have you ever heard of that? Return on investment, right? Return on investment. And we invest in things expecting to get a return. Jesus even talked about that a lot in the parables. You know, whether it's real estate or the stock market or starting a business or whatever it is, when you put money in, you expect to get some return from that, some at some rate. That's a return on your investment. Well, in God's economy, that's still true, but God puts a different spin on this. It's actually the return on obedience. I was pulling into my driveway last Sunday after church, and this thought just popped into my mind. I'm guessing it was the Holy Spirit. Return on obedience. What happens when we obey God when He tells us to give? And we met with some brothers after church last week to talk about church finances a little bit. And one of the brothers said, everybody around this table knows, because they've seen it in their life, that when you obey God and give, He gives back. And He gives back in so many ways. So we're going to talk about, first off though, we're going to talk about giving money here in just a minute. But we're going to first talk about giving the gospel. And there's a video, you may have seen this before, it's been around for years. It's called The Man from George Street. I'm not going to spoil it for you. It's about an 8-minute video. It's a little bit long for a Sunday morning, but we're going to watch this video here called The Man from George Street. There we are. Where is the video set? Come on. There we go. All right. We're going to watch this. It's a really old video. Called The Man from George Street, and I'm going to stop talking now because I'll ruin it. All right, let's go. All right, we'll get it.
This message is non-copyright. Duplication is encouraged.
A number of years ago, in a Baptist church in Crystal Palace in southern London, the Sunday morning service was closing, and a stranger stood up at the back, raised his hand, he said, excuse me, Pastor, can I share a little testimony? The pastor looked at his watch, he said, you've got 3 minutes. And this man proceeded. He said, I've just moved into this area. I used to live in another part of London. I came from Sydney in Australia. And just a few months back, I was visiting some relatives, and I was walking down George Street. You know where George Street is in Sydney? It runs from the business hub out to the rocks, the colonial era. And he said, a strange little white-haired man stepped out of a shop doorway, put a pamphlet in my hand, and he said, excuse me, sir, are you saved? If you die tonight, are you going to heaven? He said, I was astounded by those words. Nobody had ever told me that. I thanked him courteously, and all the way on British Airlines back to Heathrow, this puzzled me. I called a friend who lived in this new area, where I'm living now, and thank God he was a Christian. He led me to Christ. And I'm a Christian, and I want a fellowship here. And Baptists love testimonies like it. Everyone applauded and welcomed him into the fellowship. That Baptist pastor flew to Adelaide in Australia the next week. And 10 days later, in the middle of a 3-day series in a Baptist church in Adelaide, a woman came to him for counseling, and he wanted to establish where she stood with Christ. And she said, I used to live in Sydney. And just a couple of months back, I was visiting friends in Sydney, doing some last-minute shopping down George Street, and a strange little white-haired man, elderly man, stepped out of a shop doorway, offered me a pamphlet and said, "Excuse me, ma'am, are you saved? If you die tonight, are you going to heaven?" She said, I was disturbed by those words. When I got back to Adelaide, I knew this Baptist church was on the next block from me, and I sought out the pastor, and he led me to Christ. So, sir, I'm telling you that I am a Christian. Now, this London pastor was now very puzzled. Twice, within a fortnight, he'd heard the same testimony. He then flew to preach in the Mount Pleasant Baptist Church in Perth. And when his teaching series was over, the senior elder of that church took him out for a meal. And he said, "Mate, how'd you get saved?" He said, "I grew up in this church from the age of 15 through Boys Brigade. Never made a commitment to Jesus, just hopped on the bandwagon like everybody else. And because of my business ability, grew up to a place of influence. I was on a business outing in Sydney just 3 years ago, and an obnoxious, spiteful little man stepped out of a shop doorway, offered me a religious pamphlet, cheap junk, and accosted me with a question. 'Excuse me, sir, are you saved? If you die tonight, are you going to heaven?' He said, I tried to tell him I was a Baptist elder. He wouldn't listen to me. He said, I was seething with anger all the way home on Qantas to Perth. He said, I told my pastor thinking he would sympathize with me, and my pastor agreed. He had been disturbed for years, knowing that I didn't have a relationship with Jesus, and he was right. And my pastor led me to Jesus just 3 years ago. Now, this London preacher flew back to the UK and was speaking at the Keswick Convention in the Lake District. And he threw in these three testimonies. At the close of his teaching session, four elderly pastors came up and said, "We got saved between 25 and 35 years ago, respectively, through that little man on George Street giving us a tract and asking us that question." He then flew the following week to a similar Keswick Convention in the Caribbean to missionaries. And he shared the testimonies. At the close of his teaching session, three missionaries came up and said, "We got saved between 15 and 25 years ago, respectively, through that little man's testimony and asking us that same question on George Street in Sydney." Coming back to London, he stopped outside Atlanta, Georgia, to speak at a naval chaplain's convention. And when his 3 days of revving these naval chaplains up, over 1,000 of them, in soul winning, the chaplain general took him out for a meal. And he said, "How did you become a Christian?" He said, "Well, it was miraculous. I was a rating on a United States battleship, and I lived a reprobate life. We were doing exercises in the South Pacific, and we docked in Sydney Harbour for replenishments. We hit King's Cross with a vengeance. I got blind drunk. I got on the wrong bus, got off in George Street, and as I got off the bus, I thought it was a ghost. This elderly white-haired man jumped in front of me, pushed a pamphlet in my hand and said, 'Sailor, are you saved? If you die tonight, you're going to heaven.' He said, the fear of God hit me immediately. I was shocked sober and ran back to the battleship, sought out the chaplain. The chaplain led me to Christ, and I soon began to prepare for the ministry under his guidance, and here I am in charge of over 1,000 chaplains, and we're bent on soul winning today." That London preacher, 6 months later, flew to do a convention for 5,000 Indian missionaries in a remote corner of northeastern India, and at the end, the Indian missionary in charge, a humble little man, took him home to his humble little home for a simple meal. And he said, "How did you, as a Hindu, come to Christ?" He said, "I was in a very privileged position. I worked for the Indian diplomatic mission, and I traveled the world, and I am so glad for the forgiveness of Christ and his blood covering my sin, because I'd be very embarrassed if people found out what I got into." He said, "One bout of diplomatic service took me to Sydney, and I was doing some last-minute shopping, laden with parcels of toys and clothing for my children, walking down George Street. And this courteous little white-haired man stepped out in front of me, offered me a pamphlet, and said, 'Excuse me, sir, are you saved? If you die tonight, are you going to heaven?' He said, I thanked him very much, but this disturbed me. I got back to my town, I sought out the Hindu priest, and he couldn't help me. But he gave me some advice. He said, 'Just to satisfy your curious mind, nothing else, go and talk to the missionary in the mission house at the end of the road.' And that was fatal advice." He said, "Because that day the missionary led me to Christ, I quit Hinduism immediately, and then began to study for the ministry. I left the diplomatic service, and here I am, by God's grace, in charge of all these missionaries, and we are winning hundreds of thousands of people to Christ." Well, 8 months later, that Crystal Palace Baptist pastor was ministering in Sydney, in Gynea, southern suburb of Sydney. And he said to the Baptist minister, "Do you know a little man, an elderly little man, who witnesses and hands out tracts on George Street?" And he said, "I do. His name is Mr. Genor, G-E-N-O-R. But I don't think he does it anymore. He's too frail and elderly." The man said, "I want to meet him." Two nights later, they went around to this little apartment, knocked on the door, and this tiny, frail little man opened the door. He sat them down, made them some tea, and he was so frail he was slopping tea into the saucer as he shook. And as he sat with them, this London preacher told him all these accounts over the previous 3 years. This little man sat with tears running down his cheeks. He said, "My story goes like this." He said, "I was a rating on an Australian warship, and I lived a reprobate life. And in a crisis, I really hit the wall, and one of my colleagues, whom I gave literal hell, was there to help me. He led me to Jesus, and the change in my life was night to day in 24 hours. And I was so grateful to God. I promised God that I would share Jesus in a simple witness with at least 10 people a day. As God gave me strength. Sometimes I was ill, I couldn't do it, but I made up for it for other times. I wasn't paranoid about it, but I have done this for over 40 years, and in my retirement years, the best place was on George Street. There were hundreds of people. I got lots of rejections, but a lot of people courteously took the tracts. And he said, in 40 years of doing this, I've never heard of one single person coming to Jesus until today. You know, I would say that has to be commitment. That has to be just sheer gratitude and love for Jesus to do that, not hearing of any results. Margarita did a little count. That's 146,100 people that simple little non-charismatic Baptist man influenced somehow to Jesus. And I believe what God was showing that Baptist minister was the tip of the tip of the tip of the tip of this iceberg. Goodness knows how many more had been arrested for Christ and were doing huge jobs out in the mission field. Mr. Genor died 2 weeks later. And can you imagine the reward he went home to in heaven? I doubt if his face would ever have appeared on Charisma magazine. I doubt if there would ever have been a write-up with a photograph in Billy Graham's Decision magazine, as beautiful as those magazines are. Nobody except a little group of Baptists in southern Sydney knew about Mr. Genor. But I'll tell you, his name was famous in heaven. Heaven knew Mr. Genor. And you can imagine the welcome and the red carpet and the fanfare he went home to when he arrived in glory.
Now, Jeff just told me a few minutes ago to stop crying. Whew! I tell you, that gets me every time I watch it. Wow! The return on obedience of this man who did not see any results. Well, today I want to talk about National Evangelism Day. It's coming up. Let me flip this projector back over. There we go. Did you know that Halloween is National Evangelism Day? What day is Beggar's Night in your neighborhood coming up in 2 weeks? It's the one culturally acceptable time of the year when you can go to anybody's door and ask for stuff. Right, and so when these cuties come up to your door, you can greet them with some big money. And I have some big money here. I'll tell you a story about this. I have some tracks. Mr. Genor, the man from George Street, would hand somebody a track and ask them, "Are you saved? If you died tonight, would you go to heaven?" And when these cuties come up to your door, you can hand them. I've got a table set out back there. I want you to take some of these and give them out at Halloween, all right? There's the world's best optical illusion tract, all right? It's got the gospel message in it. There's 101 of the world's funniest one-liners with the gospel message inside. You've got a Ten Commandments coin out there. You've got this George Washington million-dollar bill. You know that won't spend anywhere, but it's a lot of fun. And this one particularly has a message more written for children on the back. But some of these others, like the Benjamin Franklin million-dollar bill, there's also a, I don't think I've got any of the Abraham Lincoln trillion-dollar bills out there, but these are more written for adults. Then I found this one. This has the Franklin $100 bill. Obviously, it's a little bit big, but on the back, it's got Amazing Grace. Everybody knows the song Amazing Grace, and it tells the story with a gospel message. And so you can put these in people's trick-or-treat bags coming up as a really practical way to plant some seed for the gospel coming up this Halloween. Now, I have left tracts. I tell you, I didn't really start giving out tracts until I came here to New Song. And I kind of picked up this habit. I travel a lot for work, and so, but when I'm home, sometimes I've left them in the aisles at the grocery store. I have given them to the airport parking attendants. It's late at night when I get in off the road from my flight, and these poor people get to sit in a booth all night, and every now and then they take some money from somebody at the parking lot. And they got to be bored out of their mind, so I'll give them a Gospel of John, I'll give them a tract. Sometimes after I pay, I'll give them a $1 million bill or a $1 trillion bill. And it was 1 a.m. Saturday morning about 3 weeks ago. And the way it works at the airport, I don't want to pay for the parking garage right up to the airport. That's a lot of money every night. I go to the red lot, and I park in 26A every time. And I know who all the shuttle, I know most of the shuttle drivers. And so I get off my flight, I get on the little shuttle with my luggage to go back to the parking lot, and I don't recognize the shuttle driver. I said, "Hey, are you new here?" And he says, "No, I just work the weekends whenever I need money." And I was like, "Well, I've been here for 2 years." I said, "Well, I haven't seen you around." And so just making conversation. And so the idea is that these guys will pick up your luggage and put it on the shuttle, and then when they get you to the car, they'll take it off the shuttle, and you give them a tip, a couple bucks. Well, I didn't have any ones in my pocket. I did happen to, I always carry these in my little cash roll here in my pocket, and I had a $5 bill, and I pulled out an Abraham Lincoln $1 trillion bill, and I wrapped it inside the $5 bill, and I gave it to the parking attendant, and I grabbed my suitcase and went to my truck. Now, this is 1 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and it was his last stop of the night. So I get my luggage in the truck, and I noticed that the shuttle had stopped up here, and this man comes walking up to me at my truck window. And I roll down the window, and he says, "Are you a Christian?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "I'm from Ethiopia. And we are brothers in Christ. And because of Jesus' blood is why I'm here." And it was just really encouraging to see this brother from around the world was encouraged by this tract. And he said, well, as an Ethiopian, he was grieved to see how much in America the Christian message has been suppressed. And we talked a little bit about where he went to church and all that. But I've left these little bills. I've given them to people on airplanes. And it's just a great way. You pull out an Abraham Lincoln $1 trillion bill and you say, "Hey, with a few of these, we could fix the deficit." You know, it makes a great way to break the ice with people. And if you don't know what to say, or maybe you even don't like to talk to people, hey, I have left these in hotel Bibles. When the Gideons place those Bibles in the hotel room, I'll find the book of John or the book of Romans, and I'll just drop a tract in there as a bookmark for somebody looking for some counsel that night. Actually, one hotel, I went to the Bible, and I turned to Romans, and there's the same tract that I'd put in there like a few months before. I'd had the exact same hotel room. In the airplane seat pocket with the magazine, I'll stuff them in there, you know. And just pray, and I pray, God, send the right person that needs that word. You know, so you can leave these things everywhere. I've left them in hotel rooms, restrooms. Just find a place that works for you. Wherever it is in your day-to-day routine, wherever you can leave a track for somebody, there's a whole table of them out there in the back. I'd love to see those seeds go out and be planted. So take some for Halloween. Take some to give away at work. In your bulletin, there is a list of sources of three places where I found you can get good tracts. I basically went to a bunch of websites several years ago and requested their free tract kit. And some of these were really poor, really bad. They looked old. They looked really not well done at all. But I found a few sites that had some really nicely done tracts. Moments with the Book, Great Commission. At our own Great Commission site, we've got some tracts there. And then a place called Living Waters, where Ray Comfort, with his evangelism techniques, where he has. And I'll just tell you that, you know, Ray Comfort's method is very confrontational. On the back of these bills, it says, "Are you a lying, thieving, blaspheming adulterer?" wow, that's really aggressive. But Ray's angle is, hey, we've got this person's attention for 1 minute, and they, a lot of people don't feel like they need to be saved. And so he presents them the Ten Commandments. If you died and you're standing before God and he were to judge you by the Ten Commandments, would he let you in? And so his is a little more aggressive, just be aware of that. Now, some of these others are a little softer. But anyway, some great places where you can leave tracks and pick up some tracks as well. A couple tips here is don't give them as a tip, right? Do not leave a $1 million bill track as a tip, all right? Because that will just reinforce the negative image that believers have in the food service industry. Right? Don't do that. However, if you leave them a really generous tip, then you might consider doing that. Mailed bill payments. I don't know. I think I'm finally away from mailing bills, but I did do this a few times. You mail in a payment for your bill, just drop a track in there. I read this 100 tips thing yesterday, where to put tracks. Put them in the pockets of clothes that you donate. I thought that was creative. Yeah. How about put them in the break room, the doctor's office, hospital waiting rooms, places like that. People need something to read. Give them with the best Halloween candy. I remember the person that gave me that track, they had these massive candy bars, right? And also, when you give tracks, read them and be prepared to discuss them. Know what's on there. Don't just be giving them out blindly. And use a variety for different people and different occasions. There are different tracks that focus on different messages. And you can, based on the conversation you're having with the person, find a track that seems to fit where they are. And then you can also write your own testimony track. Great Commission's advocated this for years. And so you can write your own story. And actually, I noticed out at the Moments with the Book website yesterday, they actually have a track printing service. If you wanted to put your own content, and they'll print it and make it look all fancy for you. So you can write your own testimony about what God delivered you from. And it's very personal then to hand that to someone. So the most important thing, though, is to pray. Routinely, I'll pray, God, there are tracks in hotel rooms all over the United States where I've left them. And sometimes I won't put them in the Bible. Sometimes I'll put them in that little folded thing where it says, here's where the laundry and the services of the hotel. I'll stick it in there. It's basically somewhere where the cleaning people won't find it and throw it away. Right? So you can put tracks lots of places. And then just pray, God, those seeds are out there. You know who needs them. Lead them to them, Lord, and pray that it would really connect with them. So when we talk about stewardship then, number one, we have this treasure in earthen vessels that we are stewards of, and we need to share it with others. So that's the first half of this message. The second half, though, is on a very different subject, and that's on stewardship of our finances. And I'd like you to turn to 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. The Bible talks about money, some have said, more than any other topic. It talks about money a lot. And so it's really a challenge where to start, because I like to talk. And I like to read the Word. And there's so many passages we could teach every week on finances and never run out of topics. But the reason I chose this one is I think it's probably just about the longest passage of finance. Conversation here in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. Now, to set this up a little bit, this is the tale of three churches. The churches in Macedonia, the churches in Achaia, which is where the church at Corinth was, and the Jerusalem church, the tale of three churches. In this particular situation of giving, talks about giving with a special offering. There are different kinds of giving. We can give what we call our tithe, which is 1/10 of our income that we give to the Lord. And I'm thinking next February or so, we're going to come back to this topic of giving again. And I really want to go and do like a 101 God's economy kind of teaching and really talk about where does that come from. And we'll get into more of that later. But there's a tithe. But then there's offerings, where we just take up things beyond that. You know, the tithe goes to the local church, and then offerings go to all kinds of needs that are presented to the body. So giving concepts, though, that we're going to look at in this passage, while they talk about special offerings, they really do apply to just giving in general as a believer. Now, if you look at verse 1 there of chapter 8 in 2 Corinthians, it says, "Now, brethren, we wish to make known to you the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia, that in a great ordeal of affliction, their abundance of joy and their deep poverty overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. For I testify that according to their ability and beyond their ability, they gave of their own accord, begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And this not as we'd expected, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. So we urge Titus that as he had previously made a beginning, so he would also complete in you this gracious work as well." So wait a minute, I'm confused. Paul's writing to the Corinthians, but he's talking about the Macedonians. What's going on here? Well, you don't have to turn, but back in Romans chapter 15, there's a little backstory on this. Romans 15, 25 through 27 says, "But now I'm going to Jerusalem serving the saints." So Paul is writing to the church at Rome, says, "I'm headed to Jerusalem. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make a contribution for the poor among the saints in Jerusalem." So Paul was on a campaign collecting donations, offerings from these different churches to take them to the saints in Jerusalem who were having a particular hard time. It says, "Yes, they were pleased to do so, and they are indebted to them. For if the Gentiles have shared in their spiritual things, they're indebted to minister to them also in material things." So Paul makes this connection between the spiritual and material there. Now what I'm going to do, have no fear, I'm hoping we can make it through two chapters of Corinthians 8 and 9. And rather than have slides and bullet points, what I'm going to do is just kind of read through this passage. And I want you to have your spiritual antenna up and listen for a particular part of one of these passages that speaks something to you particularly about giving. And so I'm going to emphasize a few things as we go along here, but I want you to just listen to the word itself today as we go through these two chapters. Now, the first thing I notice here in chapter 8 is there's this dichotomy between deep poverty, beyond their ability. These people were not just poor, they were in deep poverty. And how are they able to give? And he uses the words opposite that, wealth and liberality, meaning they gave and gave so much when they had so little. Some of you have heard me teach on this before and heard a lot of my stories. It reminds me when we first moved to Savannah, Georgia. And this was in August of 1997. I think we moved down about maybe April, May, June, somewhere like that. August of that year, 97, Noah hadn't been born yet. And I was working different part-time jobs. And I think our grand total income for 1 month was about $800. And you can't really pay the rent and feed a family on $800. But it was enough to buy a $50 season pass to the beach. And so I'd work a couple days, and we'd go to the beach a couple days, and just didn't have the work or the income. But even then, in those thin times, we honored the Lord in giving. Even then, when we had very little to give. And I can't say that it's directly because of that, but God has blessed us so much far beyond those times, those lean times. Early on when I was in college, we got married halfway through college, and Mary was working at a daycare making $500 a month, and we tithed on that $500 a month. We gave to peers who had less than us in those days. And because we have maintained this habit of giving, regardless of our circumstances, God has given back to us over and over a return on that obedience. And so that's what Paul's talking about here, how these people were in deep poverty, but they still gave. So let's keep going, verse 7. "But just as you abound in everything, in faith and utterance and knowledge and in all earnestness, and the love we inspired in you, see that you abound in this gracious work also. I'm not speaking this as a command, but as proving through the earnestness of others the sincerity of your love also. I really find this interesting with Paul. You know, he was in a place of leadership and authority in the church, and he could have told people, here's the number, I got to see this much in the plate, right? But he didn't do that. Paul wasn't demanding and shaking people down for donations. And, hey, look, you can do more than I know you can do better than that. You know, giving people the stink eye when they pass the plate, right? He wasn't doing that. He said, I'm not speaking this as a command, but you can prove how much you love these people, how you give and how you support them. And that's what he was appealing to. You know, and when Jack and I talk about giving up here, we're not here to shake you down and to empty your pocketbook, right? It's not about that at all. It's about encouraging you to get that return on your obedience. Because God's the one that gave the command, not us. And we want to see you enjoy the benefits of that obedience and giving. I'm going to skip down a little bit here. Let's keep going. There's a section at the end of this chapter talking about Titus and some logistics of coordinating the gift. This whole thing Paul was putting together took a year. A year of planning across these regional churches to collect and sending different ones who were trustworthy to handle that monetary amount to take it to Jerusalem. And so he talks about some of that here. Let's skip on down to chapter 9 because I want to watch the clock. I don't want us to be here too long today. Get you home by 3 o'clock, I promise. So it's verse chapter 9. For it's superfluous for me to write to you about this ministry to the saints, for I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the Macedonians, namely that Achaia has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. So now he's playing them against each other, right? Hey, the Macedonians now, they ponied up, and now it's, yeah, and they knew you guys were really into this, and we're looking to see how much you're going to go now. Kind of starting this little competition almost between the church to outgive one another. You know, but he says, because of your readiness, that means they had a posture and an attitude of giving. They were ready because they knew this rule of God's economy, that there's a return on obedience. So if we skip down a little bit there, verse 5, so I thought it necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead of you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness. He's calling out number 10, Ten Commandments, 10th Commandments, thou shalt not covet, right? Wanting what's not yours. He even, Paul had that kind of Pharisaic background. It kind of came out a little bit there. So now verse 6, now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will reap bountifully. And this is just a typical thing. If you've got a garden, I did square foot gardening for a while, and you make these little square foot plots, and I had a 4x8 box. So that's 4 times 8, 32 square feet. So in each one of those square feet, you could plant one seed. Well, green beans, you could get 9 in a square, right? But what if I only put one green bean plant in each one of those squares? I would have much less. I sowed sparingly. I would reap sparingly. But if we put 9 green bean seeds at each one of those square foot, and you multiply that times 32, that's a whole lot of green beans. And then you get to pick them twice in each season. And my wife and I can, our backs will tell you, bending over, picking beans, there's a good harvest there because we didn't sow sparingly. We sowed bountifully and we reaped bountifully a lot of green beans. A lot of itchy too, picking beans. But anyway, it was really good. And so what he's saying here is this works in the kingdom just like it works in the garden. If you put in a little, you'll get a little. If you put in a lot, you'll get a lot. That may come back to you in different ways. And some people have said, you know, when I give this month, I see it come back next month. It just works that way. And I'm not making any promises here. You know, the old stock market disclaimers that, you know, previous performance does not guarantee future results, right? Right, that's that thing. But I tell you, it's over and over through the Word, and it pains me to stick on one passage because this is so many passages I want to share with you about giving. But this particular one calls it out well. And Jesus talked about the same thing himself, you know, planting and reaping. So verse 7, then each man must do just as he's purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you so that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good deed. Each man must do as he's purposed in his heart. Jack and I are not going to inspect your checkbooks. That's between you and God. Some people say, you know, you can look at somebody's checkbook and tell how close to the Lord they are. You know, do they give on a regular basis? Is that part of your habit and your routine in supporting in God and His kingdom? Because right here it says He loves a cheerful giver. And I tell you what, there is cheer and joy and rejoicing throughout this entire passage that you can pick up on, because it becomes fun sometimes. When in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus talked about not doing things to be noticed by people, like praying in public or fasting and giving in public in a public way. Say, oh, look at me, look at what I'm giving. So you're supposed to do your giving in secret. And then it becomes a secret mission. And that's fun. You see somebody that has a need, and you approach somebody else at church, a leader or somebody, and you say, you kind of slip it to them, say, hey, you know, give them this, right? And then they have no idea where it came from. And then you're talking to them next week, and they have this amazing testimony of how God met their need. And you're like, yes, I can't say anything, right? Giving can really be fun. There really is joy in giving and seeing the transformation happen in people's lives. I get chill bumps just talking about it. There's a real joy in seeing God use you to meet someone else's need. And it's not that it's like we have to kind of force a smile when we drop it in the plate. Right? That's not what this is talking about. This is talking about a deep joy that you get the satisfaction of knowing you made a difference in that person's life when you gave in any number of ways, particularly financially here. And then verse 8, God is able. He's sufficient. When you step out and you trust Him and you give financially, He's going to make sure you can feed your family. Psalm 37 says, I've never seen the righteous forsaken nor their children begging for bread. There's a, was it Janet Pascal? I've never seen the righteous forsaken. Anybody know that song? Nor seen begging for bread. All right, anyway. I think maybe the 90s, so there's a song made out of that. Psalm 37, you know, God is sufficient. If you step out in giving, He's going to meet you there, and He's going to make sure that things are taken care of, because as we look at verse 10, He who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. That right there is the return on obedience. He will increase your harvest when you're sowing in obedience to Him. Talking about finances here. You will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. For the ministry of this service is not only fully supplying the needs of the saints, but it's also overflowing through many thanksgivings to God. Because of the proof given by this ministry, they will glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ, for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all, while they also, by prayer on your behalf, yearn for you because of the surpassing grace of God. And thanks be to God for His indescribable gift. So Paul is talking about this relationship that happens when you give. You are blessing the person that's receiving. But he says, notice this whole thing, this overflowing liberality, increase. There's these words, multiplying. Notice what happens when you step out in obedience. There's a larger return than what you gave. And that's the way God's economy works. There's a return on obedience. And notice it says, they will glorify God for your obedience. they will glorify God. God will get glory. God will receive praise because of what you've done. When you step out and you obey and give, God gets all the glory for that. And then he snugs this all up right at the end. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. God started it. He is the giver. He gave us everything we have. He gave Adam and Eve. There's my Genesis reference for you, Ron. He gave Adam and Eve the fruit and the vegetables and said, eat up, enjoy yourself, you know, stay away from this tree over here, but look at all this good stuff I got for you. God's the giver. And he gave his son for our salvation. His indescribable gift. He's the giver, and we just imitate our Father. We do what our Father does. We give because he gave to us, and we give to others. Now, we've done this recently. You may recall, I think it was the first Sunday in September, a lady named Wendy had been attending here for just about a month, and she came forward and told us the story of a woman from Africa with three children who did a bad thing, actually. She ran a stop sign, and somebody hit her coming the other way. Do you remember that story? And she heard the scream. She ran out of her house. She helped this lady. And we took up a collection for this lady that day. She had no money. Her car was the only way that she could provide for her family. And we took up a collection, just like Paul was talking about here. We took up an offering to give this lady. And so Wendy sent us an email. And I want to share this with you today. She says, "Dear Ron, Jack, and Ashley, I'm writing to thank New Song Community Church for responding in love and faith to the mom who was in a recent car accident whose car was totaled. I would like to update you on how the congregation's gift on offering helped provide for Lillian and her three daughters, Margaret, Ruth, and Esther, with a new to her used vehicle with no financing or payments. New Song provided $952 on Sunday, September 3rd. This is on the spur of the moment, no announced offering. We collected $952 for Lillian and her family. Thank you. You're going to get the return on that obedience, right? And see, she says her own self $250 separately to help with the car rental expense that she had. Jeff, and she says this in her email, Jeff and Lael, there they are. Jeff and Lael lent their van for a couple weeks, saving Lillian the cost of a rental car beyond the first week. So they didn't give financially necessarily, but they gave their vehicle for her to use for a couple weeks. It saved her several hundred dollars. And the $952 was distributed as follows. Now, I've never had anybody do this. She actually sent us an email with receipts of everything that she spent and gave of the donation. She was really wanting to be accountable for that gift. And so then she says, "I share all of this to show how God has provided for the needs of a single mom from Kenya. She does not receive child support. Her car is her only means to get to work, and work is her only means of income. When I responded to the traumatic situation, this emergency and the accident, and tried to calm her 17-year-old Margaret, who was bleeding and nearing shock, I assured her that God would provide. And he is, in large part, through New Song Community Church. May God be glorified. What an honor to be used by God and to be joined by so many of you at New Song. With a grateful heart to you and my Heavenly Father, Wendy Tipton." Thank you. Thank you. Praise the Lord. God has a book that he keeps. He has a logbook himself that he keeps count of things. And he sees what you've done to help this mother from Kenya, this single mother that needed help. And I am just so thrilled that we are a giving church. We really do enjoy that. And if you are not enjoying that part of your relationship with the Lord, I really want to encourage you to do that. There is a whole new level of blessing Now, I want to be careful here that I don't sound like some of the word of faith people, the name it and claim it, and the, you know, the more you give, the more God's going to, you know, I want to be careful here. You know, I'm not saying, you know, add up the numbers from this week to next week and God's just going to multiply it. There's a lot of people out there on TV with a really bad reputation about that when it comes to Christians and money, right? It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that when you step out and obey God, there is going to be a return on your obedience. And those are the fun stories. There's a lot of fun stories. I was just really so pumped at the baptism last night. I had to fight back the tears. I just enjoy watching people come alive and what God's doing. And every little thing that we obey Him, there is a return. Specifically in money, there is a financial return as well. And I want to challenge you and encourage you, if you're not following God obediently in this area of giving, step out and watch Him work. Malachi chapter 3 says, test me and I'll do it. I'll meet you in this. God asks us to test Him in that. So, speaking of giving, we've made it really easy for you. In your bulletin, there's another insert that looks like this. We have an online giving option. If you want to, if you pay your bills online, if you want to give to the church online, you can do that. When I sit down with my checkbook to do my bills, I'll go to the church website, inewsong.com. There's a giving link up there, and if you do it from your phone, you can download the app for Apple or Android, and you can install this Easy Tithe app, or you could even just text an amount to this number, and this is on your insert in your bulletin there. And then you can even use your online banking, whatever. So we can make giving very convenient for you as well. But I just wanted to share that in case you weren't aware, you can give online as well. We're in the modern era, so we can do online giving also if that's helpful for you. So, return on the investment, return on obedience, giving the gospel, giving finances, our time, and there's joy. There is absolute joy. When you step into that freedom, because let's face it, that's one of those chains that need to break in our lives sometimes, is this financial bondage. And when we are under that, I know what that's like, to be under that financial stress of debt. And in the middle of that, when you can give, that brings a joy and a light in the middle of that. And God will use that giving and give you a return on that obedience to help shed those shackles of debt. So, like Daniel talked about last week, you know, there is a real blessing in godly ways of handling your money. So, when you look at your bulletin, there's a place for you to take some notes. At the very bottom, what is going to be your takeaway today? We've talked about a lot of different parts of giving as we looked at this passage. And I think I inadvertently skipped the whole part where it says there in chapter 8, and it says Christ, having all the riches of heaven, gave it all up to become poor so that we who are poor can have all the riches of heaven. And when we step into that obedience, we do become rich in so many ways. So I pray that today you will take that obedient step and stewardship, what God has given you, and using it to bless others, to give into the kingdom. Let's pray.